The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Now, for older listeners, they might have heard my next guest being grilled by me on political matters over the 1990s and the early 2000s, but she left politics, and since then she has embraced creative writing and is here to talk about her new collection, which is called Tiny Bruises, and much else. Liz McManus, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
So for those politicians who are weary of the game, there is life after politics.
I don't think I was weary of the game. I just felt that my job was done. I had been 32 years, whether local or national politics, a public representative. And I felt it's not healthy to be a TD and have a free travel pass. So I did retire gracefully, I hope, while they were still clapping.
All right, you retired, and you had always written, though. This is not something that came to you as an afterthought to politics.
I did always write, but I think early on, I had so little confidence. I never thought of myself as a writer. That came much later, particularly when I retired. And I had, this is my fifth book now. I think now I can call myself a writer.
But you decided to do it properly, as it were, in quotes, that you took a creative writing course.
I went back to college. I went to Trinity and did a master's in creative writing. Immediately after I retired from Dáil Éireann, then I went on and did a PhD. A friend of mine, slightly coerced, convinced me I should do the PhD. And it was a wonderful experience. It was through UL. My tutors were Tino O'Toole, but also Joseph O'Connor. So I had this very wonderful relationship with my tutors over 3 years, and produced this book out of that experience and that work.
Now, when you took the creative writing course, I mean, you had been writing. Can you remember what single or maybe a couple of things that you learnt that you didn't? Because I suspect if I tried to write, dialogue would be my weakness. I'm not sure I know how to write dialogue.
I don't know, really. I think I could always write dialogue. I just didn't believe in what I was writing. I'm not sure where this all comes from. I really don't. I'm no help to you, Pat. I mean, I do remember Richard Ford, who was one of our visiting lecturers in Trinity, and he said, before he talks to somebody, particularly if it's kind of a confidential or an intimate thing, he says, before you tell me anything, just remember, and he tapped his head, it all goes in here. So I think you are absorbing, as a politician, as a TD and a local councillor, I was absorbing people's experiences continually. And I felt that was very important to my work. I don't believe in this kind of sneering at clientelism. Everybody has a story if you listen hard enough. And a lot of it is just hard work as well. If you really want to do it, you can do it. There are books written that have no dialogue. So, you know, give it a go. I do think, Pat, and I'm a bit of a proselytizer about this. Everybody our age, I believe, should consider writing a memoir. Your children won't care. Your grandchildren might be interested, but your great-grandchildren will be fascinated.
Now, the question of memoir as distinct from, if you like, a historical account of what you did. Because there can be the facts, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
But a memoir is something different because it's how you remember it, how you experienced it.
Yes. And I think that's, to tell the truth, I think that's what makes it interesting. And it's also why I write fiction and why I wrote Tiny Bruises, because I look back over my life. I was born in 1947. And all I could see was this transformative change that took place in Ireland over my lifetime. And I want to explore it. And I want to explore it through fiction. So I took, obviously, the earlier part of the 100 years of Irish independence, I didn't experience, so I did a lot of research on that. But I wanted to start at the very beginning, 1919, 1920, and work through till 2022. And each story is one person talking about their experience during a decade.
Now, the first story from my recollection, because I've been through the book in the last couple of days, it's about a Soviet.
Yes.
In County Monaghan.
Yes.
And it's an extraordinary thing. I did not know. I'd heard about the Limerick Soviet, but I had not heard about the Monaghan Soviet. Is that based on fact?
Completely. I mean, obviously, the little girl who's in the lunatic asylum is fictional. But the actual Pat O'Donnell's role, the fact it was the first Soviet in Ireland, the fact that it was successful, all this is true. I mean, that's what I'm interested in, using historical events, but making them, I hope, more real.
This was in a mental home, a mental asylum, as they used to call them, and the staff were underpaid and they wanted a better deal.
And apparently they had been fighting for this for years. And eventually they took over the institution, they barricaded, the police came and occupied part of the building. And the thing caught my imagination was the staff and the inmates exchanged their uniforms in order to bamboozle the police. Yeah. I mean, that's so magic, you couldn't make it up.
And I'm not sure whether the little lad looking after the donkeys in the field is a real character or not, but
no.
Even he swapped his garb.
Exactly. I mean, he had to.
We won't give too much away because it's a charming story and a very diverting one. But there are very serious social issues explored in your early stories. A girl who becomes pregnant and ends up working for a farmer. And again, I don't want to give too much away of what happens to her, but it's a sordid account of the way Ireland was in those days.
Well, the hiring fair, I mean, there were hiring fairs, I think, up until the 60s.
She was a young teenager and she's hired out for money by her mother.
By her mother. And, I mean, poverty makes people desperate. I don't want to be too judgmental because I think conditions were so harsh that people had to survive whatever way they could. And that is really, in a way, Ireland is the hero of this book.
Yeah, the fact that we've survived at all.
The fact that we've developed, we've liberalised, we have become prosperous. You know, we eventually got to develop our economy so that we didn't have this massive drain of emigration, which I think was a real, you know, running sore all through the early 50 years. I don't want to be kind of Pollyanna about this, but it is a story of not just success, survival, but it's also about success.
Now, there are big picture things, but you reduce them to the essentials. I mean, two neighbours, Protestant and Catholic, on the border. And unfortunately for both, the Protestant ends up on the south side of the border and the Catholic ends up on the north side of the border. But that tells you everything about partition in microcosm.
Exactly, how arbitrary it was. And how destructive it was in many ways. Now, I'm not one of these people who believes we should be having a referendum on a united Ireland. I think that is just foolish talk. But I do like the idea of a united Northern Ireland. And I think the recent FLA showed how we can actually have that coming together of communities in Northern Ireland. Let's do that first. And then maybe in the future we can
who
talk about
who would have thought you'd have a Shankill fife and drum band.
The Shankill Road Defenders Band. Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable. It's wonderful.
And getting roundly applauded for their efforts. Extraordinary stuff.
It is. And Emma Little Pengally made a wonderful speech opening the FLA. And I know there were kind of divisions inside the DUP, but she was coming from the DUP, an official spokesman, second minister, and she really came up to the mark. It was wonderful. Mm. The whole experience was wonderful.
Now, it hasn't all been plain sailing for this benighted republic of ours. You have a chapter called The Crash.
Yes.
and that, I suspect, the initial bit draws on your own experience waiting for an election result.
I hated the count after each election. I was more than happy to go around knocking on doors, but sitting in a hall, I think I'm probably quite an impatient person, waiting for each count to come. It's agony.
Yeah. Your former Labour Party colleague and leader, Rory Quinn, I don't believe he's very well at the moment.
No.
But Rory used to go to the movies.
He did. More power to him. But, I mean, I got elected initially for Democratic Left. we weren't in a position to let anybody go to the pictures. We just all had to stay there. We were such a small party, you know. And it is, I don't know if there's any better system than proportional representation, actually. I think it's one of the reasons why we haven't seen this massive growth of right-wing politics the way you have in other European countries. I think PR protects us to an extent. Now, it does mean that we tend to have more centrist politicians, but it also means that I got elected on my 13th count.
Yeah, so as a candidate, you get good value. Even if you end up falling by the wayside, you know, you're in there for the long haul.
You are. But also people get a good value because it's an interesting relationship. I mean, if somebody comes to you with a problem, in a sense, they feel she owes me one. I gave her a vote, even if it was the 13th vote, you know.
I got her over the line.
I got her over the line and they did.
Now, you have a chapter at the end about COVID.
Yes.
And we won't go into it. It's actually, it's not what it appears, shall we say, that the fundamental narrative is set against COVID. Yes. And you have Kathleen Holohan.
Yes.
Now, we thought, is that about Tony Holohan, COVID?
Oh, no.
But it's not.
No.
It's not.
Never struck me. No, it's supposed to be Kathleen Ní Houlihan. Now, at one level, it's a story of a woman who is getting on in age, an old flame contacts her out of the blue during COVID, and they have a lot of talk on the phone, and they had this fantastic kind of affair right at the beginning of when they were in students in college. And it was, you know, as when you're young, do you remember, Pat? These things were wonderful, but they disappear as time goes on. And it was also, for me, it was a metaphor. I mean, she's Kathleen Houlihan. She's also Kathleen Ní Houlihan. At the beginning of the century, Ireland had this amazing experience, the excitement, you know, the Celtic Revival, 1916, women coming out looking for women's suffrage, everything in turmoil, the War of Independence, bloody and all as it was this tremendous step forward. And that was really the equivalent of the affair. And I'm asking the question at the end, is Ireland able to do the same thing again in terms of the big issues that affect us now? And that's the question.
And that's the question. The book is fabulous. It's called Tiny Bruises. I presume it's available in all good bookshops and even the bad ones.
Actually, it's not. It's a real problem, if you don't mind me saying this very quickly. The two biggies, Easton's and Dubray's, seem to use British distributors. I have an Irish distributor. And you can certainly get in independent bookshops, and they're wonderful. You can get in libraries. Keep asking for it.
Keep asking for it. Yep. It is well worth finding. Liz McManus, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.